Please help me to welcome our speaker tonight. Our speaker is Lily M. from the Richland Town Candlelight Meeting.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lily. I'm an alcoholic. It is an honor to be up here tonight. I am truly grateful. It is only by the grace of God, the 12 Steps of Recovery laid out in this big book, and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I am able to stand up here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you tonight. I get really, really nervous when I speak. Thank you. I get really nervous when I speak, so just bear with me. I heard someone say that it's God shaking the truth out of you. So I hope that's the case tonight. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love this program. It has saved my life. Probably the least thing that I like about it is this right here, is speaking. And it's really funny the way that God works in my life today, because I was thinking about this on the way down, and for the last 2 weeks, I had just, as of Saturday, moved an hour away. And for the last 2 weeks, I've been praying that I stay willing to stay busy in the program, to stay active, because I know I'm moving to another area. And also praying that I stay in touch, that I'm willing to drive down here and stay in touch with my fellows down here, the fellowship that I built up around me. And, you know, he's got such a good sense of humor, because he just answered 2 prayers in 1 day. I just got the phone call yesterday to come down here and speak tonight. And this is the actual meeting that I walked into and got sober. And from that point on, I dreaded being up here at the podium speaking for this hour. But I am truly, truly grateful. And the one thing that I told myself all day today, whenever the nervousness or the fear would crop up, the one thing that I told myself over and over today is that it's not all about me. It's actually not about me at all today. It's about you. It's about the newcomer that walks through that door that needs to hear some hopelessness turned into hope. It's about the person who's hanging around, coming to the rooms, and hoping that the fellowship keeps them sober, just hanging on, white knuckling it. It's about anyone who can take anything from this today and just get a little bit of hope. And I'm just giving it to God because, you know, it is only by the grace of God that I have this story to tell. And I am also one of those alcoholics who feel that I needed to take every single drink that I took, and I needed to do every single thing that I did to get me where I am today, because I would not trade where I am today. I would not trade it for anything in the world. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has given to me. And I guess, you know, I'm told to come up here and share my experience, or my experience, strength, and hope. You know, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. So that's what I'm going to do. I was born into a family of 9 children. My father being an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. So growing up for me was very, very chaotic. We were very poor. My father was always drunk. I seen a lot of abuse, verbal, physical, emotional, mental abuse going on through my childhood. And from a really early age, I knew the effects that alcohol had on somebody else. And I don't at all blame this on my alcoholism. I take 100% responsibility for where I'm at today and or what happened to me through my life. But, you know, when I was like 5 years old, I took the first sip of my dad's beer, and I ran upstairs and I spit it out because it was so gross. And at 5 years old, I sat and I pondered, how could my dad drink this stuff that makes him mean, that makes him angry, and that ruins our day? You know, at 5 years old, I'm looking at alcohol like this. And I swore to myself from that time on that I was never going to drink a drop of alcohol again. I was never going to be in a relationship with anybody that drank alcohol. And how ironic, I ended up being an alcoholic and being in probably almost every relationship with an alcoholic. So, you know, you got to watch what you wish for, I guess, too. But my childhood was very chaotic. There was never any order. There weren't, I always felt like we didn't have a normal childhood. I would go to my friends' families, and I would go there for dinner, and we would actually sit down at a dinner table and eat. Like, that stuff didn't go on in my house. There were 9 kids running amok. You know, mom and dad would cook something, and it would sit like a buffet. And when whoever came in or came out, you know, we'd grab something to eat and run. I'd go there, and I would witness, you know, I would see these kids sitting down with their families and them asking them, like, what happened at school today? How you doing? Is your homework done? You know, are your chores done? I never had any of that, and I always felt like, you know, like the off one. I was like, how come everyone else has this and I don't have this? So I never felt like I belonged. Like, I've seen my friends in with their families belonging, feeling loved, having one-on-one communication, and I never felt that. So I never felt like I belonged. It wasn't so much that I didn't fit in, because I could go and I could be a chameleon anywhere I'd go, and I could act the act, and I could act the part, and I could try to fit in, and I could fit in my own head. But to belong, to actually belong, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And that's another reason why I love this program, because when I walk in these rooms, I feel like I came home. I am home here. For the first time in my life, I feel like I belong somewhere. And, you know, growing up in that kind of household, I grew to love school. When I started school, I felt for a little bit like I belonged, you know. So I, not realizing what it was at the time that I realized today, it was a hole in my soul. I filled the hole in my soul with school. I dove into school, because when I did good in school, the teachers would tell me I did good. My parents may not have noticed, but the teachers tell me that I did good, you know, and I would be praised. So I really plowed myself into school, and I got straight A's, and I didn't miss a day, you know. I would get sick, and I would cry to go to school. Like, how sick is that? You know, how sick is that? You know, and you know, I talk about my parents, and as I was growing up, and even into my, you know, till the time I got sober, I always thought I had the worst parents in the world. You know, I wish I could stand here and say that I had loving parents and that they're still married today and they gave me everything, but I didn't. That's reality. But what I do realize today, again, from this 12-step program of recovery, what I do realize today is that my parents did the best that they could do with what they had. I learned today that you can't expect something from somebody to give you something that they don't have. It's just not going to happen. They're just not capable. So what I expected as a child, and what I expected even through my adult life from my parents, they just didn't have to give me, you know. And today, looking back on my life, I realize that my parents did the very, very best that they could do, very best that they could do with what they had. My father died at the age of 54 from this disease. And let me go back a little bit. So I went through school. I'm doing great. I'm digging way into school. I'm getting straight A's. I'm not missing a day. Everything was really good for a while. When puberty hit, you know, and we started hanging out, I started feeling that, you know, outsideness again, like I didn't belong anywhere again. And I discovered alcohol. I discovered alcohol at the age of 13 years old. Again, I still didn't like the taste, but I liked the effect. You know, I forced those first couple of beers because that's what everyone else was doing. And when that effect kicked in, I had arrived, as they'd say. You know, I felt good. I felt like I belonged. People were so much fun, more fun to be with, you know. My friends thought it was great. And from the very first time that I drank, I got drunk and I blacked out. I blacked out from my first drink to my last drink. And I don't remember much about that first night. I remember having some fun. I remember the phone calls the next day is what really made it for me, because I got phone calls up the wall. We had so much fun. You were great. You were so funny. You were this, you were that, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember nothing. I remember being rolled out of the car and them speeding off at the end of the night. I remember the next day waking up to my dad with pots and pans banging him to my head, teaching. He was going to teach me what it was like to have a hangover, you know. He was going to teach me. He sent me out in the yard in the middle of the summer to do weeding with a hangover, because he wanted to teach me not to drink again. That worked. You know, the alcoholic teaching the alcoholic, you know. But, from that point on, you know, I drank when I could. And being 13 years old, you know, I can't say that I became an everyday drinker by any means. But I absolutely drank when I could, and I looked forward to it. And that was, I know, when I felt the best. Not that I remembered much of it. That's why, you know, I always get nervous when I come up to speak, because I think I should have this big funny story and I should be funny and comical like a lot of speakers I hear. But you know what? I wish that I could stand here and tell you funny stories, but if I did, it would be a lie, because I don't remember. I don't remember so much of my drinking. What I do remember most is I remember being depressed after getting so drunk. I remember crying and wondering why I was alone. You know, through those teenage years of drinking, I remember boys coming into the picture, and that was another thing that I tried to fill that hole in my soul with right up until the day I walked into these rooms. You know, I thought if I had the boyfriend, I would be okay. If I had the man in my life, I would be okay. If I had the perfect relationship, I would be okay. But, you know, all the men that I ended up, even the boys and the men that I ended up, you know, choosing, they were just like me. You know, they drank like I drank, they partied like I partied, and that just doesn't work. And I ended up through my life, I ended up pushing away every single person that I thought I wanted so badly in my life and in my heart to fill this hole in my soul. I ended up pushing them away eventually because I either got scared that they were going to hurt me, and the wall of defense went up and you were gone because you weren't going to hurt me, you weren't going to touch me, or you didn't have what I wanted anymore. You know, it just wasn't enough. It was never enough. And they were always unhealthy relationships, and I always fought through them until I kicked them out of my life. Just about every person that I was ever with, I pushed away from me. You know, I never let anybody get close. When I first walked into these rooms, I heard speakers sharing, and I heard them share, you know, that they lost their great job, and they lost their great car, and that they lost their house, and they lost their family, and they lost their kids, and they're living under a bridge. You know, this is what I wanted to hear, I guess. And the reason that I wanted to hear this at this point is because I was still in denial. I was in these rooms disqualifying myself because I didn't lose all those things. But looking back on my life, I never gained any of those things. So how could I have lost them? You know? And it took me to sit down with a sponsor and work through these steps to realize that I am just as much alcoholic as that person standing up there. You know, I just never... I never got it together long enough to even gain any of those things. So when I was 19 years old, my father died. And by this time, I was drinking very, very heavily. And when he died from alcoholism. And, the first thing I did was I was like, okay, well, that's his own fault because he drank himself to death, you know. And the other thing I did was blame God, you know. I found out that I had a very big fear of abandonment. You know, my father was never emotionally there for me, and when he died, I blamed God for taking him away. You know, even though I felt he was never there for me emotionally. And this was just my perception, because like I said, my parents did great. They did great with what they had. But one of the first things I did when he died was I blamed God. And that was my relationship with God. My relationship with God my whole life. I never really had any exposure to any kind of religious or spiritual upbringing. So my God my whole life I blamed for every bad thing that went wrong. You know, I never had a God that I prayed to or that I trusted in or that I believed in. It was somebody to blame. You know, it was something to blame. God, why did you take my dad from me? You know? And shortly after that, I joined the Army. I figured if I got out of the area, maybe I could get it together because, you know, I'd lost the last boyfriend again, you know, and I blew through another job. Because what happened was is when I was, let me go back a little bit. When I was going through school, like I said, I was a straight-A student. And after I started drinking, it all went to hell. Try not to do that at all. But by the time I was 16 years old, the school, I wouldn't go to school anymore. I was too busy out partying and drinking in the woods with the other people, you know, with the other partiers. And I refused to go to school. I was just missing so many days. And back then they had truancy laws. And if you don't go to school, your parents got fined. Flat out, your parents got fined. And like I said, we were poor to begin with. My poor mom had enough on her plate, you know. And so at the age of actually it was 15 years old. At the age of 15 years old, the school had contacted my mom and said, would you please come and sign her out of school? Because if you don't, we're just going to start slamming you with fines. So she went down to my high school, and she signed me out of high school in ninth grade. And what I did was I moved out of my house at that point. I got an apartment with my boyfriend, and I got a full-time job. And I thought, this is great. I'm doing better than everybody in my class because I'm already making more money. I got my own apartment. And what that turned out to be was I had more money to drink, and I had a place to do it. And I had parties day in and day out. We had grain parties. I would throw up I would drink until I throw up and black out. By the time I was 16, I was diagnosed with ulcers. The doctors are asking me, how much do you drink? I'm like, maybe a six-pack on the weekend. They're like, yeah, okay. Keep doing what you're doing, and you're going to end up like your dad. So at the age of 19, I joined the Army, and I thought, well, maybe I could get out of here, and maybe I could, you know, the good old geographical change, and maybe I'll get it together, you know. Maybe I'll go do something and see the world. I wanted to go see the world. That was my thing. So I joined the Army. I did basic training in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. I did AIT in Fort Lee, Virginia, and I was sent home. So I didn't see much of the world. I didn't even get off the East Coast. But I did come home, and I served 10 years in the National Guard, which, you know, that was weekend warriors. And back then, and I don't mean any disrespect whatsoever, because I truly, truly respect our armed forces today. But back then, we basically, when we did our drills once a month on the weekends, all we did was drink. Back then, that's all we did. There was nothing going on. There were no wars. There was no nothing. There were actually bars in the armories back then. You know, they were allowed to have bars in the armories. So that turned out to be a pretty good party itself. But while I was in AIT, I did get busted for some substances that I took back in some purses and stuff when I came home and took my civilian stuff back. And I lost everything. I lost every honor that I gained there. I lost all my school standing, everything. So I came out the same rank I went in. And so that didn't do much for my alcoholism, because it just took off. I was allowed to drink on base. I was allowed to drink, you know, like I was 21. So I came home, and I just proceeded to go from job to job to job, boyfriend to boyfriend to boyfriend. What I would do is I would move into an apartment. I would get a boyfriend. I would have a job. I would drink all my money away. I wouldn't pay my bills. I'd get rid of the boyfriend. I'd start getting eviction notices and shutdown notices, and then I'd lose my job. Actually, I wouldn't lose my job. What would happen is I'd be ready to lose my job, and I would go find another one so they wouldn't fire me, because I was smarter than them. Pardon me. This is pretty much how my life went. You know, I was telling my sister-in-law today, I was like, you know, I said, I'm going to end up getting up there, and I'm going to forget about everything that I'm supposed to share with them. And she says, how can you forget about a life of destruction and chaos, Lil? I was like, wow. You know, like, it's just a good reminder of how other people viewed you, you know? Like, she's seen me go through it. She's seen me destroy as a world went through my life. And I ended up hurting so many people, you know. I fought for years and years. It's just me. I'm just hurting me. Like, right to the end, I would tell people, leave me alone. I'm not hurting anyone. Little did I know, you know. When it came time, when I did my fourth and fifth step, and I started really taking a look at myself, I was blown away. I was humbled beyond words. And when it came to the ninth step, and I had to start making those amends, wow. Then I really realized how many people I have really, really hurt in my life just by my actions. Pardon me. So, needless to say, my job record doesn't look too good today. I went through a lot of jobs. I went through 3 years of school. In my late 30s, I went through 3 years of school. I figured I'd go back to school and I'd get it together. And while I went through school, I went and I got a job waitressing, which is a perfect alcoholic's job. You know, I went to school from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock, and I went to work from 4 o'clock to like 11 o'clock, and I was able to drink all night. I got up in the morning, I'd have a couple beers before school. I'd stay up at night, and I would do my papers in blackouts. I would write my papers in blackouts. I graduated that school, by the grace of God, because I don't know how. I don't remember half of the projects I did, but I did them, and I passed. But, you know, the reason that I say that I blame God for a lot of the bad stuff that went on in my life is because I lost a lot of people that were really dear to me in my life. And that's, you know, the only thing that I knew how to do with that grief, I wouldn't allow myself to grieve except to blame it on God and to drown it out with the bottle. I had a brother that, he was like my twin. Out of 9 siblings, me and him were the closest. We were the tightest. We did everything together. He took me through a lot of years of my life and good times. And at the age of 38, he took his own life as a direct consequence of this disease. And it crushed me. When that happened, it absolutely crushed me. And I absolutely turned to God, and I cursed him, and I cursed him, and I crawled into a bottle. And I couldn't understand why God could take such a beautiful person, you know. I just couldn't understand it. And that was my conception of God. And I crawled into that bottle, and I just went gung-ho. And my drinking took off like it never took off. And no matter how much I drank, the pain would not go away. It would not lighten up. So I needed another solution. So again, I had to go find another boyfriend. And I did. I did. I ended up moving back home. Pardon me. I ended up moving back home up towards my parents, because I did have a house fire and everything burned down. So I moved back up towards my parents. And when I went back into my hometown, I stopped at the local beer store. And here this guy that I grew up with, I knew him all my life. We grew up together. He knew my family. I knew his family. Just happened to own the beer store. And we fell in love. Imagine that. We fell in love. And he knew my brother, so he helped me get through that. You know, we could share memories, and he really cradled me on that one. And yeah, he owned the local beer store, and we fell in love, and we were in love for a good maybe 8 months. And pardon me. Needless to say, my home was very stocked, and I was very drunk all the time. And that was a perfect love relationship for me. The other thing that I didn't tell you is that he was married. He was in the process of going through a divorce. His wife was getting a house. He was getting a beer store. The beer store meant everything to him. What happened was she found out that he had a girlfriend. She didn't know who it was. But she said she was going to have him followed, and if she found out, she was taking the beer store as well, because she knew where to hit him. She knew where to hit him that it would hurt. So me, being a noble person that I am, I went to him and I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I don't want you to lose your beer store, because what will we do then? Okay? What will we do then? So I'm going to back off. We're not going to see each other for a while. You're going to get through this divorce so that when we're together, you still have your beer store. Okay? 3 days later, he shot himself and killed himself. He took his own life. He, too, was very much of an alcoholic. So, again, I could definitely contribute that to a direct consequence of this disease. This right here is how, like, I don't even have the words to express how I felt when I found that out. But needless to say, I crawled into the bottle, into my apartment, and I did not leave for probably a good 3 months. I had my friends bringing food and alcohol to the house and leaving it on the porch and picking up the envelope, because I would not even look at them. I didn't want to see anybody. I didn't go to school. I didn't go to work. I didn't do anything. I barely ate, and I drank, and I cursed God, and I cried. And that was what I did for 3 months. you know, why does this keep happening to me, God? First my dad, then my brother, then my Jamie. You know, like, I just couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand what I was doing wrong. Why was I being punished so bad? You know, all these deaths and all these beautiful people that I'm losing to this disease, and I'm sitting there making it about me. I'm sitting there pitying me over this. Like, how sad is that? Today, thank God, I can see how blessed I was to have them in my life at all. You know, after they died, when their anniversaries would come around, I would drink over them. You know, the anniversary of their death would come around, I would drink, and I would sit on their grave and pour beer on their grave and pour liquor on their grave, and I would drink and I'd get trashed. And I'd cry and I'd blame God. Today, when their anniversaries come around, I celebrate their life. I get on my knees and I thank God that those beautiful people were put in my life, that I learned the lessons I learned from them, we shared the love that we shared, and we made the memories that we made. And that's what this program has done for me. That's what this program has done for me. Talk about a change of perception. You know, after that, about 3 months later, I started coming out, and I got back on my feet a little bit. I went back to school. I met somebody that I really, really liked. And he wasn't, believe it or not, he was not an alcoholic. He drank, but he didn't drink like I drank. I honestly thought he was my soulmate and we were going to make it. And you know what? He broke up with me because he says there were red flags. I drank too much. I did too many drugs. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I would get drunk and fight with him over nothing. And he broke up with me and my heart was crushed again. You know? And again, I blame God. And then one more thing happened, you know. My best friend, who I had for about 20 years, 44 years old, died of cancer. I was just like, at this point, I just couldn't take anymore. You know, I just could not understand what was going on, because at that point I was so sick. I was so deep into my sickness. I thought it was all happening to me, you know. I didn't see that it was happening to the beautiful people around me, and that, you know, death is part of life, although, you know, it's really sad that it comes from this disease. But, you know, when she died, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I got really, really angry at God. And I said to God, fine, if this is how you want to play, this is how I'll play. I'm going to go join them. And I proceeded to eat every pill I could find in my house and drink as much liquor as I could put in my body. And I woke up in Horsham Clinic, really angry. Really angry. And, you know, I bullshitted my way through my stay there, and I told him I made a big mistake and I just needed to get back and get my job and get back on my feet and get back to work and get back to school. And they believed me and they let me out of there. And I went to stay with my brother at this point. And you know, you think that would have been enough God shot. I went to stay with my brother at this point, who opened his house and opened his heart, you know, and let me in his home. And I stayed there with him. And I didn't pay him a red cent while I was there. And I worked full time. And they told me, don't worry about the money. Save the money. Get yourself back on your feet. I said, fine. I didn't pay them. And this is hindsight looking at this. I didn't pay them a red cent. They set their whole basement, whole finished basement up. I had my own shower or my own bathroom, you know, my own bed and the whole deal. Beautiful, beautiful home. You know. And I was working like 3 to 10, and I was stopping at the bar every night with the girls that I worked with, and I'd drive home in blackouts every night. And finally, my brother sat me down, and he said, Lily, so we're really worried about you. You can't be doing this, you know. Like, you're going to end up with a DUI. You've got too much to lose. So I got an attitude, and I said, okay, fine. You know what? I won't do that anymore. So I went into work the next day, and I said, I can't go to the bar after work anymore. My brother said so, and that's it's his fault, you know. And I didn't. I tried not to. All I did was, you know, I kept a bottle in his refrigerator upstairs and about 6 more downstairs. So I'd go home after work, I'd have a drink, I'd put the bottle away, I'd say goodnight, and I'd go downstairs and finish drinking until I blacked out. I'd sleep till 1 o'clock in the afternoon every day. I contributed nothing to his household. No money, no effort, nothing. I'd get up, I'd shower, I'd go back out the door. So finally I decided, I saved a little bit of money, and I decided that, you know, this was hindering my way of drinking too much. So I moved a mile away. I moved because I didn't want to be away, but I did. So I got my own place with my drink and took off again. And I started stopping at the bars after work again and driving home in those blackouts. And I was, it got to the point where I was starting to scare myself. Because I was waking up in the morning and I was walking out to my car and I was creeping around my car and I was looking to see if I hit anything. Because I remember briefly in a blackout, like hitting bushes. You know, I pray to God that I didn't hurt or kill anybody while I was out there driving like that. Because that's scary. It's really started to scare me for the first time in my life. So I thought, well, I better just come home and start drinking at home. And that's what I did. You know, I'd go home and I would drink until I was in an absolute blackout. I'd wake up in the morning, every bottle I had in the house was empty. There'd be phone calls on my phone I don't remember making. You know, people calling me up, talking about stuff we talked about last night. Didn't remember it. I do remember sitting, getting drunk, the alcohol not working for me anymore. Because I would sit there and I would cry my eyes out, wondering why I was alone, why God was doing this to me. And why I was such a loser. And it got to the point where, you know, I would try to not stop. There was one bar that was closest to my house, and I would try so hard not to stop there, and I would find myself leaving there drunk, half remembering, you know, saying I'm not going to stop there. And I'd end up there, and I'd end up leaving there. I'd end up getting up in the morning knowing I was there. Not remembering more than walking in half the time, you know? And it just really started to scare me. And, you know, New Year's Eve came. Oh, boy, I really screwed up in the beginning. My sobriety date is December 31st, 2007. My home group is Richland Town Candlelight Meeting. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I use my sponsor today. I'm so sorry. That's how I'm supposed to start. Oops. But anyway, you know, New Year's Eve came, and the night before New Year's Eve, a guy that I worked with asked me if I wanted to go out, or if I wanted to go to his place and have a couple drinks that he was going to buy. Everything was on him, you know, and I didn't even like him. I really couldn't stand this person at the time. He annoyed me. He got on my nerves, but he was buying. So I said, sure. He was working. I was off that night. It was a Sunday night. I was off that night. He was working until about 10 o'clock. He gave me his credit card, and he told me, Lily, go to the liquor store and buy all the liquor you want. I was like, right on. He gave me a key to his place. He said, I'll see you there after I get out of work. So Sunday night, afternoon, I proceed to drink all afternoon at home. And I figure Whitehall, liquor store's open till 6 o'clock. I'll hit the liquor store. I'll head into his place in Allentown. 6:15, I get at that Whitehall liquor store. They close at 5. It was sleeting. It was freezing rain out. I was terrified to drive in it. I proceeded to get back in my car and drive to New Jersey to get liquor. I kept trying to think of a friend of mine that I could call who in Jersey would know what time the liquor stores were open. So, well, the only person I knew in Jersey was somebody in the program. And I knew I wasn't calling him because he'd been meeting me somewhere going, Lily, what are you doing? But I proceeded to drive to New Jersey, and I drove there, and I hit the liquor store in freezing rain, white knuckling and scared out of my mind, half drunk. And I got a couple bottles of vodka, and I went back to his place. And I proceeded to pour myself martinis, straight up, extra dry. And that was it. I don't even remember this man walking in the door. I don't even remember him coming home that night. All I remember is waking up in his bed the next day. Somebody I couldn't even stand, and it turned my stomach. I woke up in his bed the next day, throwing up all over the place. And I was never so sick in my life. My head felt like it was going to split. I threw up all over his bed, all over his bathroom, all over his living room, all the way out the door. I got in my car. I had to pull over 4 times on the way home, throw up. I was never so disgusted, so repulsed by myself, and so sick. I went home. All I wanted to do was sleep this off. That was not happening. I laid in that bed for a little while, between running to the bathroom and back. I mostly laid in my bathroom on the floor, and I threw up for literally 8 hours straight. All I wanted to do was smoke a cigarette. I couldn't even do that. I could not even do that. I had work to go to that day. It didn't happen. And I knew, with it being New Year's Eve, I'm missing yet another day of work. If I didn't show up that day, I was going to lose my job. So I'm laying back in my bed, absolutely repulsed. Started to really look at my life. And I was never so disgusted, so frustrated, and so absolutely terrified in my life. I was in so much pain, it was unfathomable. And all I could think of to make the pain go away was to take my life. And all I could think of with that thought was how my mom felt, and how my brothers felt, and how I felt when the people I loved did that. Mostly, though, I knew that I did not want to do that to my mom and to my family. So some miracle, some moment of clarity, by the grace of God, I put my hands together and I asked God to please, please take this pain away. Please make this stop, because I truly did not know. I was terrified as to where my life was going to lead. I was 42 years old. I had nothing. And I was going nowhere. And my life was absolutely driven by fear and by pride. I was too damn proud to ask for help ever, to even admit to myself that I needed it. You know, probably about 2 months prior to that, my friend who I was talking about that lived in New Jersey, that's in the program, he called me up. I had worked with him for years and years and years. His family was actually the only family, like true, real family I've ever known. They became my family. And he called me up and he says, "Lily, I haven't seen you in a while. Let's get together. I really have something I want to talk to you about." I was like, "All right, awesome," you know. So we checked our schedule, and the only night that I had off was a Monday night. So he said to me, he says, "Well, I'll tell you what, I go to a meeting in Quakertown Monday night." He said, "You can either come down and sit in the meeting with me, or maybe meet me at the diner afterwards." I said, "All right, I'll come down to the meeting. I'll support you. You know, you're a good alcoholic. I'm a good friend. I'll come down and support you." So I actually came down to this meeting. I walked in here, and I wasn't in here 2 minutes, and this lady comes up to me. And she's hugging me, and she's saying, "Hi, my name's Eva Ben, Eva Ben." And I was like, too happy, back off. I was just like, holy crap, what was that all about? Today, she's one of my very, very, very best friends, and I love her dearly. But, you know, I heard a speaker that night, and this man, you know, really went through a lot, the gentleman that spoke, and he had an incredible message, and the story that he laid out, and the fact that he was standing up here in a suit, and just with a light in his eye, and a love for life, and a love for others just blooming away. But I still left and went to the bar that night, because I wasn't ready. I just wasn't ready. I wasn't done yet. But when I was laying in my bed that night, and I put my hands together, and I asked God to make this go away, that's what came to my mind, was those happy ladies that came up and hugged me. All the happy faces, the man that spoke, and my thoughts that night that I was here thinking, how could these people possibly be clean and sober and be this happy? This is sick. And I was also hearing, you know, how much time they had. Like, I was hearing people talking about having 5, 10, 20 years. I'm thinking, what the hell are they doing still coming back here? Like, don't you get better and go home? Like, don't you have a life? Like, this is how I honestly thought. And, but, you know, these are the things that kept coming into my mind this night. So I didn't go to work that night. But the next day when I woke up, I didn't drink. I picked the phone up and I called my buddy and I said, "You know what, I need help." And he said, "Lily, it's about damn time." You know? And he told me to go to a Saturday night meeting, because that was the next one that I could get to. He said, "Come down to this meeting." So I showed up at that meeting, and I walked in there. And a man walked up to me and he said, he asked me, are you new? I said, yes. And he said, do you have a sponsor? I said, no. And he said, well, here's my wife's phone number. Give her a call. If you don't give her a call, maybe you'll see her at the meeting Monday night if you go back to Quakertown. I was like, all right. And I'm thinking, boy, that guy's got a lot of nerve passing out his wife's number. Like, is she going to be ticked off? I didn't know. I didn't get it. I didn't realize. You know, I'm thinking, here's this guy giving his wife's number out to girls. Like, what is he thinking? I'm thinking, I'm not going to call her. I'll see her Monday. So Monday night I came back to this meeting for the first time, and that same woman walked up and hugged me again, and she said, are you still visiting? And I said, no, actually, this time I'm really ready to get serious. I think I need some help. And she was just like, welcome home. And I sat down and I was telling her, I said, maybe I'm supposed to see this girl named, Karen here tonight. And the same time I said that, the chairperson's up here going, let me introduce our speaker, Karen. And I was like, is that her? And she's like, yep. This little tiny girl came up here. And she talked about how she was called to speak and she didn't want to, but her sponsor taught her never to say no, because it's not about her. She stood up here and she talked about how she needed you as much as you needed her, She told my story. She absolutely told my story. I sat in that chair and I bawled my eyes out the whole night, the whole hour. I was absolutely blown away. This is how God's working in my life. Didn't realize it then, but this is how God was working in my life. I was told to go up and talk to her afterwards. I went up and I talked to her and I asked her if she would help me. She gave me her phone number. She said, you call me tomorrow. She said, if you want what I have, if you want what we have, she said, you'll do what we do. She said, call me tomorrow at this time. I called her tomorrow at that time. She told me, if you want this, come down here right now. She gave me directions to her house. I was like, holy crap. And I was a little, I didn't understand how this worked. And I'm like, wow, this girl's going to let me in her house. Like, she's willing to, take me into her house. And, she's got a kid and a husband. And, she doesn't even know me. Like, this is going to be way weird. But I went anyway. And I thank God for her today. She sat me down. She went through this big book with me. She went through this book right here is my Bible today. This book is where my solution lies. 12 Steps of Recovery plainly laid out in this book. It is a spiritual program. It cracks me up when I hear people say the spiritual part of the program. There's not a spiritual part of the program, folks, at least not for me, not for this alcoholic. This program is a spiritual program. And it's amazing, because the spiritual part is a God of your understanding, and that's what she told me. She said, you can pick a God of your understanding. If it has to be the AA fellowship for now, that's fine. But don't come around the fellowship and hope to get better and not get into the steps. Somebody put it to me this way, that I don't know if I need to be leaning down like that, but it's pretty comfortable. Somebody said to me, becoming a member of a 12-step fellowship and not doing the steps is crazy. They said it's like joining a gym and going to the gym and sitting on the bench and watching everybody else do the work and expecting to get better, to get healthy, and to get healed, and to get strong. That's how it was put to me. It's insanity. And I only agree for me, because I know that what these 12 steps did for me. And when I sat down with that sponsor, she took me through this. She explained to me. We went through the doctor's opinion, which was a great relief to me, because, when my dad was going through this alcoholism, and then when I went through it, I thought we were just nuts. I thought I was truly just mentally retarded. No offense, but I thought I was just, I thought it was totally a mental issue. And when we went through this doctor's opinion and I learned of the physical, there's mental and physical, the allergy, it was such a relief. It was such a relief to know that I have a mind that's telling me I could drink and a body that just can't, you know? It's an abnormal reaction, an allergy, abnormal reaction to anything you put in your body that causes an abnormal reaction, you know? Absolutely, I did not drink like other people, you know? We started going through these steps. She went through history with me, and she showed me how it took two guys, you know, to go out and help others. You know, the one guy goes out to help others. That guy goes out and helps others to give this away, you know, that it took the spiritual awakening, that no human power is going to relieve us of this, and that we can't do it for our father, and we can't do it for our children. We can't do it for our mom. We've got to do it for ourselves. We've got to go within, you know. She took me to step one and says, Lily, you know, step one is pretty much a no-brainer for me. When you drink, when you pick up that drink, do you know when you're going to put it down? Nope. When you put it down, do you know when you're going to pick it back up again? Nope. It's really fun, manageable. And she didn't even let me answer. She just looked at me and said, of course it is, or you won't be sitting here in front of me, you know. Step two, am I willing to believe in a power greater than myself? Well, you know what? I was absolutely willing to believe. And again, you know, I had that life driven by fear. That's what made me willing to believe, to be honest with you. I was so terrified of what was going to happen to me. I was willing to believe in anything at this point. I knew that my way was not working. I knew that my way was an absolute total failure in my eyes. So was I willing to believe? Absolutely willing. She says, that's good enough. And when we got to step three, God of my understanding, she says, if you need to believe what I believe in for now, if you need to look around and see the miracles in the rooms going on and believe that there's something out there greater than yourself that's making all this happen, she said, that's good. Start there. As long as you're willing, and as long as you're willing to turn it over. We got on our knees. You know, it says in the big book that when you get on your knees and you say the third step prayer, that if you do it sincerely, that sometimes, you know, you'll feel something at once. I got on my knees with her, and we did the third step prayer, and I didn't feel anything. I felt silly. I got up, and I left her house that day, and she told me, keep saying that morning and night on my knees. She gave me directions for my fourth step, and she sent me home. Like I said, I felt nothing but silly. So all the way home, I'm thinking, I'm not doing this right. I'm not going to get it. I'm going to fail at this again. I wanted this so badly. I wanted to be better. I didn't want to live like this any longer. I went home and I dropped on my knees in my bed. I opened this book up. I put my hands together and I said that prayer. And as I did that, I started crying. And I started sobbing. And I let it all go to God. I gave Him everything, every fear, everything I've been through, you know, everything. I cried probably for a solid 45 minutes. I cried, God, please show me. Please, if you're there, please help me. Please show me how to pray. The whole deal, like I laid it out heavy, hysterically. I thought I was absolutely losing my mind. After about 45 minutes, I stood up and I shook it off. That's when I felt it. I felt such a relief. I felt such a weight come off my shoulders. I can't even explain it. That, to me, was my very first true spiritual experience, because I truly, for the first time in my life, I got a feeling of serenity that everything was going to be okay. That I was going to be okay. And I walked through that day with a smile in my heart and on my face. And I sat down and I wrote out my fourth step. And when I went to do my fifth step, she starts looking at it, and she's like, okay, well, let's find what you did. Let's find your part. And I'm like, I didn't do nothing. She did this. He did that. Look at the mess they made out of my life. You know, I just wasn't seeing it yet. But I'll tell you what, that's why it is so critical to sit with a sponsor. You know, I hear people trying to do fourth and fifth step themselves. Sit with a sponsor. Sit with a loving person, a friend. Do a fourth and fifth step. Because what I was seeing on that paper, what she pointed out to me, was an absolute miracle. Like, it totally changed my perception of things. She pointed out things to me in such a loving but firm manner that absolutely changed my perception of things. fourth and fifth step, you know, I want to say that I really dreaded doing it, but I didn't give myself enough time because I was so scared of the life that I was living that I was so willing to do anything. I know that I feared it somewhat, but what I feared was the anticipation of it. It wasn't doing the work itself. It was just the anticipation of doing the work. Once I got into it and once I got through it, wow, what a life-changing event for this alcoholic. Sixth and seventh step, it was really cool because, you know, with the fourth and fifth, finding all those flaws and all those character defects, it just helped me do my sixth and seventh, you know. And she told me, going through the fourth step, fifth step, she's like, Lily, this isn't to make you feel bad about yourself. The more we find, the more we can give away. It's like cancer. If you don't know you have it, you can't get it fixed. You can't have it healed. So don't be afraid. Let's do it thoroughly. And when I got to my sixth and seventh step, I had a lot of character defects to pray about and to work on. And I work, even to this day, earnestly, you know. That's the step. Step seven, they say that's the step that separates the men from the boys, you know. So are you going to be willing to do your part to make those changes, you know, to live a different way of life, to live these spiritual principles? Step eight, making my list for my amends. There were some off my four step. There were some that we added. Like I said, I didn't realize how many people I had harmed until we really sat down and I told her my story, you know, and she pointed things out to me. And I was terrified of doing step nine. I was absolutely terrified. But you know what? The very first amends I made was to that gentleman who broke up with me because I drank too much and drugged too much. And today we're still best friends. He's so proud of me and how far I came. So in a big way, he is a soulmate. You know, we'll always be friends. But so many of my amends turned out so well. Some of them didn't want to hear about it. And that's okay because I did my part. And I'm okay with that today. You know, step 10, every day, trying, you know, to do the right thing, to do the next right thing. If things go a little crazy, and they do, and I mouth off or I say the wrong thing, I don't sit with it for too long at all today, you know. I'm able to recognize it, and I'm able to go make things right. At the end of the evening, I sit down and I review my day. I go over my day to see how on track I am, you know, to see what I need to do to keep living this life. Step 11 is one of my favorite steps today. You know, I told you I asked God to teach me how to pray. He did. He did. And I love my time. Love my time with God. I love my meditation and my prayer. Step 12 is where it's at, though. Step 12 is how I stay sober today. How I give this away. You know, I kept hearing in this program, you got to give it away to keep it. You got to give it away to keep it. I'm like, what the heck does that mean? You know, but today I know what it means. Today I actually know what it means. You know, you got to give it away to keep it. This has been so graciously given to me. And for me to tell Dave tonight, no, yesterday, no, I'm not going down there. It's going to rain and I don't feel like driving like I wanted to. For me to do that would just be absolutely selfish. Like, who am I to do that today? If my sponsor would have did that, I'd be done. But you know what? I love being in service today. And I love working with girls today. I absolutely love working with girls. You know, this is the way I feel when I work with girls. It's me here. It's my sponsee here, or the girl here, and God here. And He works directly through me. And that joy and that feeling that I get when He works through me like that is absolutely the greatest joy I've ever known in my life. Ever. It is indescribable. It is what keeps me sober today. To see the lights go on and the lives come alive in girls today is absolutely the greatest joy. And I wouldn't change it for anything. You know, like, I would never stop staying active in this program. God willing, you know. I don't want to get too cocky because, you know, it's real easy to get complacent. And I am absolutely, absolutely not immune from this disease, you know. It takes work. It takes living the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not a program that you can just go through the steps once and you're done. You know, it is practicing these principles in all of our affairs every day, to the best of our ability. And I absolutely fall short, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I'm not immune to this. But the joy that I get from working this program and the way that it has absolutely changed my life, I wouldn't trade it for anything, absolutely nothing in this world today. So if you're new out there, please keep coming around. There's hope here. There's a lot of hope. I went through 30 years of drinking and drugging and destroying things, including myself. And I'm standing up here today, and I am happier than I've ever been in my life. Not any material gain. It's all inside. It's all inside. I feel love for each and every one of you that I look at tonight here. Each and every one of you. If you would have told me this 3 years ago, I would have been like, I ain't standing in a room with those losers. You know? The perception change is absolutely amazing. The way that God enters us, God of your understanding, the way that He enters you when you allow Him to make these changes from the inside out, to take responsibility for your own life, and to be willing and have the desire to possibly make someone else's better. It's absolutely amazing. I'm so grateful to be here tonight. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here tonight. Like I said, I hate speaking. But thank you. That's all I got.